Like do you understand any of that?
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And did you know that there are over 200 beavers in the Rio Grande?
And today we're looking at Series 5, Episode 6, The Vampires of Venice.
No vampires. Romania.
Yes, we saw ghosts and we've seen werewolves. We've seen ghosts and werewolves, and now we're getting vampires.
Hooray!
What sort of thing might you be expecting from the vampires of Venice? What are you expecting from a vampire story in Doctor Who, if anything at all?
Sorry, I was just thinking about my favorite vampire story, Twilight.
Sesame Street?
Fuck, that would have been a much better answer.
Still going.
It won.
A story you can count on.
Story for the ages.
But before we get into the episode proper, I figured we would watch. There were a couple little shorts that they did called Meanwhile in the TARDIS.
Where did they air?
These actually did not technically air. They were both created specifically for the home release of the show. If I had to guess, they were probably filmed to be in the episode and then were cut for time, but they work well enough on their own that they work as little sketches almost. So the first one takes place between episodes 1 and 2.
Okay.
That's right when Amy gets picked up. And the second one takes place between the last episode and the one we're about to watch, which I partly just do because I think it's a nice... They're both fun little moments. So if you guys would like to watch them, they are available on YouTube. Also, they're available more legally on any of the home releases of Doctor Who. Meanwhile, in the TARDIS 1 and 2, we will be back in just a moment. And we are back from Meanwhile in the TARDIS's. TARDIS?
The TARDIS.
TARDIS's?
The Tartu.
Tardi. Judas?
Sure.
So what did you think about the little shorts?
I see why they were extras.
Yeah, they're just little extras.
Feels very much like they are more or less intended for people that are just jumping into Doctor Who with Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Because it's like a recap for very basic TARDIS knowledge.
Yeah. It almost feels like it was just an exercise to, like, let the actors sort of vibe off one another, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
There's some fun elements to it, like seeing Amy try to constantly recalibrate the Doctor in her direction. And he's just like, no, I'm Gandalf.
No, I'm Space Gandalf. I'm 907 years old. When I see a star, I just see a burning ball of gas, which then means that. In doctor speak, then, when he sees a vagina, he just sees a reproductive organ.
Yeah, and then he was like, yeah, I'm a space Gandalf, or the little green one in Star Wars. I kind of like that. What is he's like spins around going, woo.
See, we had the misfortune of there were no subtitles. I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate. We watched them on YouTube, and so there weren't subtitles. Like, I probably should have whipped out the Blu-ray for this, but, you know. But either way, you know, it was just cute.
I've got audio processing issues.
It was cute. Also just sort of like as a good like ramp into this episode because it literally ended where the last one ends and ends where this one picks up.
These feel like they serve a dual purpose. They placate like anybody who has been following the show. If anybody has any arguments of like, well, Amy wouldn't know that. Amy wouldn't know this about the TARDIS or like they're. Relationship is odd because past companions, me. Because I feel like in every so far, other than like
Eccleston, there has been some conflict between the Doctor and his companion about the previous companion.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
Not that I think that that is really a pertinent point for Amy Pond, mm-hmm. but at the very least, the short does address that. So that way, if you are seeing it for the first time and you are hopping in right now, you have context.
Yeah, and it sort of pokes fun at a lot of like things that haven't aged super well about the series, like that so many of the companions are women in this like dynamic, that one of his past companions was a cave woman who wore a leather bikini.
Hold on. This is news to me.
Yeah.
Record scratch. Please continue talking about her.
There was a moment, I don't know if you caught it, where Amy had mentioned, is that a leather bikini? And it's because one of the people that he picks up is a cave woman.
Zach, again, there were no subtitles. They're speaking in British. I can't understand that.
Is she speaking even worse? She's speaking in Scottish.
She's speaking in Scottish. I can't understand that. Hey, do you think the reason why she wasn't David Tennant's companion is because if she was speaking Scottish, he wouldn't be able to help himself? The Doctor would have also been Scottish then?
There are people who wonder, because Peter Capaldi, the next Doctor, is also a Scottish man, and he keeps his Scottish accent. So there are people that wonder if David Tennant is a little mad that he got rid of his, and then just two Doctors later that he got to just be Scottish.
Yeah.
But for now, we are going to get into The Vampires of Venice.
Because that opens up so many other doors. I want a Korean Doctor.
Yeah, I mean,
that'd be so cool.
I mean, I sort of have this opinion that, you know, the Doctor really should sound like he's from anywhere, because it's a British show. I get that they lean into the UK, but I kind of wish there was parts of it where they would have characters from like other parts of the British.
You can also say
Empire.
Like there is a lot of immigration that happened in the UK. You could still have an Indian dude.
Yeah.
That has
an Australian doctor.
Yeah. Oh, Gov. That's all I can say.
I mean,
there's
a little bit of that with Njudigawa, who is Rwandan.
Cool.
So, I mean, he's also Scottish, but he, you know, he's Rwandan as well. So there is a part of it where we do finally get outside of the UK a little bit and into more of the world.
Wouldn't that be great? If that's the one gift the BBC gives us, is over time, we just get more and more ethnic doctors.
I mean, I guess we'll see what happens as the show keeps going. But let's get into The Vampires of Venice a little bit here. Specifically, let's just jump right in with the Cassie Prophecy, I think. So, and part of that is just because I feel like the episode is what it says on the tin. It's The Vampires of Venice.
Yeah.
But as it is Doctor Who, I can let you know that the vampires are aliens.
Man, I was really hoping that we were going to have a Hercule Poirot crossover.
Or it's a haunting of Venice.
Yeah.
It's
the vampires are the haunting.
Yeah, no, they are aliens. And I will let you know that much like vampires, they do have an animal corollary. But it is not bats in this one.
I don't know if you just saw the train of thought that wiped through my eyes where you said animal corollary and then brain very loudly communicated to eyes to go bats.
Yeah,
then you said not bats, and then brain went bats.
I will tell you, it is not bats.
Fuck.
And I will let you, and I'm going to let you pick a broad category here, but what kind of animal do you think is there a corollary for the vampires of Venice specifically?
The children of the night. What animal might they be? It should have been.
Although they're in Venice, so it's more, the children of the night.
The children of the night. What animal might they be? I went to theater school. Nocturnal.
Okay, something nocturnal.
Yeah.
So like an owl or like what else might be nocturnal?
Go on. List.
Like an owl or oh my God.
There's lots of nocturnal.
Yeah,
rodents. Rodents are nocturnal.
Yeah,
so.
I was just, I don't know why my brain just suddenly, I went like totally blank there. But okay, well, so we'll accept some kind of nocturnal creature.
So it could be like True. That does make it very broad. If you're okay with that, because that means
I think that
it could be owls, it could be rats or other larger rodent.
I think that's specific enough. Like that, like I don't want to make the question unfair. I would say that it cuts it enough down where you're not just saying like land mammals.
Are there raccoons in Italy?
Yeah. How do you think Mario gets that suit?
That's a tanuki though. Tanuki are just in like Asian countries.
I know, but I wanted to make the joke.
Mario went on a hunting trip and skinned a poor little tanuki to make an outfit.
Found a man-sized tanuki and stuffed himself in its mouth.
I've always had the canon that Mario is very small. Like, I think even full size, he would only be like 2 feet tall.
Yeah. All right. So Cassie's first prophecy are that the vampires of Venice have an animal corollary that is nocturnal, which I think is a fair category to go with.
Yeah.
Second part of the prophecy here is, why do you think they go to Venice?
Because they haven't been to Italy in a minute.
You just think that they're just going for the sake of going to Italy, or just because?
So, I don't know, because I'm also thinking, how far is Venice from the Vatican?
The Vatican is not in Italy. It's in Vatican City, but.
Well, yeah, but it's adjacent.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's that far, but it's, I mean,
in based off of your babbling, though, I can assume it has nothing to do with the Pope.
Which probably was a fair guess.
Yeah.
From my babbling.
Yeah, from your babbling. From this episode sponsored by Zach Babble. Yeah, from a production standpoint, it makes sense to me that they would go back to Italy just because we have not been to Italy in a minute.
Okay, so you don't think there's a purpose for them going to Italy? You think they just wind up there for unknown reasons?
The only other thing I could think is that is specifically Amy Pond's request.
Okay.
Is to go somewhere. Well, because she keeps saying other planets. Mm-hmm. She wants to go to another planet. Italy is not another planet. Yeah, I think I'll just settle on they just wind up there.
Okay, so they just wind up in Venice. All right, so we will find out together as what kind of animal the vampires of Venice have a corollary to, and if they just wind up in Venice.
Yeah, the TARDIS falls off the Rainbow Road and lands in Venice.
And we will find out together as we watch The Vampires of Venice.
Podcast, it's me, Cassie. I've been taking some time away from writing ads to spend some time with my new dumb friend. They're great. They sit with me, they agree with everything I say, and they've become my rock, literally. And I wouldn't have been able to find them without the help of OK Stupid. OK Stupid is an online service that'll match you with the perfect dumb friend, so you too can have a solid companion. And there are so many options for your rock pals. The Christian Slater, the Granite Jackson, Igneous Azalea, and many, many more. The Cole Sprouse, Beryl Streep, the Bradley Cooperite, the Phylite Diller, and Benedict Cumberbatch. So come into the kitchen and see what the rock is cooking with OK Stupid. Not available in all territories.
And we are back from the Vampires of Venice. Bleh. Bleh? Bleh, bleh.
We don't say bleh, bleh, bleh.
Yeah, these ones really don't. They say more like glub, glub, glub,
glub, glub, glub, glub. So I have an argument to make.
Okay.
So I wasn't incorrect about nocturnal, because most eels are nocturnal, which these primarily were, specifically with the Moffatian teeth.
You know what? I'll take it. I'll give you the point for it.
Yes.
You, however, do not get a point for them just like accidentally going to Venice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that. They specifically went here for an Amy and Rory romantic date.
A honeymoon gift.
Yeah, a wedding present, because the doctor is basically trying to get the doctor basically believes that Amy isn't really interested in him. Amy is just in it for the adventure and is projecting that onto him.
It does feel a little bit like the doctor is trying to make up for kissing Amy.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I mean,
it does feel, though, very much like the doctor feels remorse for Amy's actions.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly since in the very beginning of the episode, it starts with him leaping out of Rory's bachelor cake. I was about to say bachelorette cake.
Yeah, no.
Bachelor cake and saying, yeah, Amy kissed me. And I kissed her. And that admittance of he did kiss her back and that she is a good kisser.
Mm-hmm.
Funny how you can say something in your head and it sounds fine.
Yeah, the doctor continues to be autistic.
This is a very interesting episode because it feels so much like it feels so almost self-contained. Like if you ignore the whole like, this is the first adventure we brought Rory onto.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of it where it just feels like you show up in Venice. There are some vampires. The vampires are aliens. We got to deal with that. Like that's so much of the episode.
It's very formulaic in the way that a lot of Doctor Who episodes are.
Yeah.
Which I had a conversation this past weekend with somebody about Doctor Who. Because it was a room full of nerds, some of which had or like were super Wholoks and some weren't. One person in particular had only seen an episode from the newest series. And so I was like, I can't really speak on your experience watching that one episode, but something that I have learned and something that seems to be very prevalent and everybody else in the room that had watched Doctor Who back then or still continues to all nod in agreement, which is sometimes you just kind of have to close your eyes and accept the bullshit and accept the nuttery that is the science and logic behind Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a whole other like spin-off conversation about how a show shouldn't need you to close your eyes and blindly accept things. And but anyways, I felt that about this show or about this particular episode.
Okay.
That you just kind of have to close your eyes and accept that, yep, sure. Sure, these are aliens that have fled from their planet that succumbed to the space and time cracks, which I'm sure we'll touch up on.
Yeah.
And there's a perception filter. And that's why you can't see the reflections, is because you don't know how to perceive the reflections. It's my whole response. This show is stupid.
Well, I mean, you're not entirely wrong. I wouldn't say you're wrong.
I'm not wrong. We've made a whole podcast about it, and every so often I get lulled into a false sense of security where there's one bit I like. Daleks, love those stupid boys.
Mm-hmm.
Just, ooh, they're awful. I love them. Weeping angels, scary as sin. The minute, though, that an image of an angel becomes an angel, fuck that noise. Hate that. Doesn't make any sense. Leave angels alone. But I will accept that. I will say every time that there was a decoration today at Costco that I was this close to getting. It was a little bit expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a stone statue of an angel. And I went, ooh, scary. I can now get angel statues, and my mom will say, oh, that's so nice. That's like that was like your grandma's favorite. Oh, and then inside I'm like, yep, that's
definitely all that is.
Yep. That is because it is a memorial for my late grandmother, not because I'm paying sort of homage to a show that I kind of like, but also vehemently despise, because we do a podcast and it's only funny if I'm kind of angry at it.
The moment that really seemed to get you with the, okay, this is stupid, was at the very end with the weather machine being turned off by a tiny switch.
I wrote down, how can you stop a storm with a fidget switch? Because it was the kind that makes a satisfying when you flick it. No, it's this. And admittedly, I was in and out of this episode because while we've been recording, both my kitty cats were sitting on either side. So cute. They deserve all the pets and accolades. So I didn't take as many notes as I wanted to, but I also didn't feel like I needed to, because this episode felt both very long and very short too.
Interesting. Okay.
Or I was like, the first note I took had only to do with Calvary.
Calvieri.
Thank you. I was thinking of Cavaretta's, my favorite Italian deli.
Calvieri.
And that Ponce little prick. Francesco?
Yeah, I think it was Francesco. Yeah.
Oh my God. The way though that they dressed him did make me think what most likely had happened is that they sent one of their costumers on a mission to go to a costume house and rent a bunch of things. You know, maybe the BBC didn't have what exactly they were looking for, but you can always go to other costume houses. Mm-hmm. You know, they found that stupid little hat and went, there's an outfit attached to this. And then the worker of the costume house went, oh boy, there is.
I've been waiting for years to bring this out.
The way that I would do the same shit when I worked at a costume house. One, somebody would find like Glinda's crown and be like, oh, and then I go, you want to see the rest? And also just the amount of opulence in and around every person in 1500s Venice.
Yeah, specifically at least the two Calvieris especially dress in deep purples.
That makes sense. That degree of opulence for them. But even the guy, Guido, he is having to turn his daughter in so she can have a better life at the Cavarello school.
At the Calzone Academy.
Yeah, he turns her in so that way she can have a better life because he doesn't make a lot of money. He's wearing a full, like, 8-piece suit.
I mean, for part of it, he's also wearing Rory's t-shirt for Stag Night.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, when he gives Rory part of his clothes, Rory's only wearing, like, a tenth of what Guido was wearing.
Yeah, I wonder if Guido only really has the one outfit. Like, it's a really nice outfit, but that's all he has.
Which there is that part to be made of, like, everybody is dressed very, like, we're communicating the time and the place and not necessarily for accuracy's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I have really fucked up and don't know. Maybe people really were opulent and I'm just really poor. And so my idea of rags to riches is rags.
Well, it's also funny, just speaking of the costuming, there's a part in the middle of the episode where you see her, like, flash into a fish lady. Like, you see Calvieri, like, her perception filter fritzes. And you
Signora.
See yeah, and you see that, like, part of her costume lines up with parts of her body.
Yeah, no, it's very cool.
But then at the end of the episode, she sheds all that off, and I'm like, Were those her bones?
Are you taking off part? Are you peeling your
is she like lobster? Is she like a hermit crab and she just like walked out of her shell?
Well, because she was also part lobster. So I think she just, that's her molting.
You know, you could be right.
I don't know how else that would make sense, Zach.
Yeah,
it make sense, Zach. I do really like the vibes that all of the other girls have, where they just kind of look like Lady Dimitrescu, but aphids.
Like they're all dressed in like pure white all the time.
They're in their underclothes, but their underclothes do look very like Regency era 1940s, like white gown.
Yeah.
But their hair is also like sexy, messy, and they're wearing makeup and they have them teeth.
And they speak in unison.
Yeah, they only talk in unison.
Yeah. Oh,
there was one in particular, though, where I was like, "Ooh, well, you're cute."
It's just a little nibble, just a little nibble.
I'll let you have a taste, nothing more.
What did you think? Because these weren't typical vampire teeth. These were more like full rows of sharp teeth. How did you think about what did you think about that design choice?
I didn't hate them. Okay. The thing that was a bit distracting is the front teeth being completely gone. It just made me think that they were like vampire infants.
Or they need fish braces.
Yeah, like they're, because I know that you had made a reference to it, and I have also brought it up, the Moffatisms. Mm-hmm. Is it always the sharp teeth? Because that seems to be a common theme for communicating that things are scary and otherworldly, is the sharp razor-like teeth.
You know, I haven't specifically heard that one, but it certainly feels true.
Because we saw it with the Prisoner Zero. Mm-hmm. We see it with the Weeping Angels. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it now with the not vampires.
Yeah, I mean, there's something very instinctual about, like, if something is baring its fangs at you, you go, huh.
Well, yeah, but typically for, like, vampires, it's the front two teeth are always the same.
Yeah, it's just the canines. It's not
the
whole.
Canines, or I think True Blood did it where it was the teeth next to. Mm-hmm. Because realistically, if you're biting somebody, it's those like first four teeth that are actually going to make contact with skin.
Yeah.
At least that was their justification. Mm. It looks silly as fuck. I think it's True Blood. Let me make double extra sure.
Okay.
That is a correct fact. Okay, yes, I was correct. Or no, so it's a combination of both. The Lost Boys also does the extra sharp teeth.
Okay.
On either side. These are more in line with supernatural vampire teeth.
Like from the show Supernatural?
Yeah.
I don't remember there being vampires in that show.
Nosferatu has the two front teeth that are the sharp.
Oh, okay.
True Blood does have the other two.
Okay.
I'm looking at a diagram that has a bunch of vampire just teeth. Just the teeth and where they came from, which is... Twilight's killing me because it's just a row of like veneers. Like they're perfect. So there is a part of me that's like, I do like the sharp teeths just because it is different. And we see vampire teeth. We know vampire teeth.
Yeah, it was nice to have, it's nice to have a change of pace, especially then they do have some vampire like isms. Like there's a moment where she says, "Mummy's hydrating," and they're like got this big goblet that she's pouring over. But then when you look at it, it's just water trailing off the sides of her mouth.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting, like a little bit of foreshadowing to let you know that they're not true vampires while still leaning into the vampire aesthetic a little bit. I think that's a fun little like hybrid moment they make.
Oh, can I tell you something?
What's that?
I thought that was like fluids that they had like sucked out of a person.
You know, it might be. I more just meant that it clearly wasn't blood.
I wanted it to be blood so bad, though.
Well, that's because you like watching blood trail out of things' mouths.
Yeah.
Like a little freak.
I just think it's neat. It's cool.
I just think they're neat.
I do like the look of blood coming out of a face.
Blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Could you imagine if I did the whole podcast like this?
This was our first adventure with Rory, really, because he was only part of the first episode.
Yes, and he is getting married in 430 years. That is my favorite number. It is only 10 away from my other favorite number.
440.
That is correct. Glad we are all enjoying the show. By the way,
how did you feel about Rory? Now that you've got a better grasp on him having a proper adventure here,
I don't know.
Okay,
because I did like that he basically told the doctor off and said that
you know what's dangerous about you. It's not that you make people take risks; it's that you make them want to impress you. You make it so they don't want to let you down. You have no idea how dangerous you make people to themselves when you're around.
And I was like, whoa. Well, good job, Rory.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really sharp insight, especially because, like, it also kind of leans into, I mean, what we did a little bit with Meanwhile in the TARDIS. I don't know how much of it you caught up on because of the lack of subtitles. But there's a part in it where she says that, you know, when the doctor walks in, he laughs at all the boys and shows off to all the girls. And so there is a part of that where it's like, because he's a little bit of a show off, there's a natural human part to, like, try and show off in return. And that makes him dangerous when a lot of the situations he gets in are life threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can also think about it in The Stolen Earth, when all the companions had come in and basically had different plans to blow up the Daleks. Not just because it's the right thing to do, but because they think that's what the Doctor would do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to also be impressive. And so there's a very, like, it's some connective tissue between Davy's run and Moffat's run, I think, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like a fun little line exchange. Where Rory is talking to the Doctor about kissing Amy, and Rory goes, "So you kissed her back?" And he's like, "No, I kissed her mouth."
Oh, I get it.
And he goes, "Very funny."
Yeah, that is a heavily coded you joke.
That's such a me joke. I shouldn't laugh at it, but I did. It was sort of up there with when Rory pulls out a tiny little flashlight and he pulls out this, like, big UV light stick. And he goes, "Yours is bigger than mine." Don't go there, Rory.
Because that's a joke about how he had a bigger flashlight, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just flashlight, just nothing flashlight. Else.
Or at the very least, ego. I do like, you know, because their storyline is really about Amy coming back to Rory after having effectively cheated on him for a minute. I do like that the way she comes back to him is not by him saving the day, but him just trying to.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to be said of, like, about just the attempt is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Being a good person is enough. Yeah,
it's the thought that counts.
Yeah, in a sense, in a very serious way, where just being, trying to do the right thing is enough of a good thing. Is enough of being a hero, even if you don't succeed.
Yeah,
it is worth trying.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. Also because there's a lot of shows and movies where, you know, the guy saves the day and his reward for saving the day is sex. So there's a part of it where it's, if you cut out that I saved the day part and I still get something out of it, there is a part of it where it's you know that it's not just I did the thing. It's mm-hmm. I was a good person.
Mm-hmm. And I also like that, because that moment they're referring to is specifically him fighting Francesco mm-hmm. with a broom.
With a broom and a couple of candlesticks that he had, like, formed for to be a cross for a minute, because I guess he thought that would work. Sweet Rory.
Yeah. Oh, honey. Bless your heart, Rory. You know, and I like that after that, like, Amy kisses him, and it shows you that she still does love and care about this person,
mm-hmm.
even though, like, her feelings might be a little complicated, particularly since in the beginning of the episode when they're going back and forth on who is going to, quote unquote, give Amy away to Cavaretto.
Calvieri.
Ferrari. They're going back and forth on if it should be Rory pretending to be her actual fiance, if it should be the Doctor giving away his daughter. Oh, that's, you know, she's...
You look too young for that.
Yeah, well, we'll pretend that the Doctor is her brother. Ah, that's weird. We'll pretend Rory's her brother. Ah, perfect. And there's just that part that's like, I can relate to that. As the, like, in a weird and twisted way, it's like, ew, that feels weird for me to pretend that, like, where it would be like in that situation I could see being like, ugh, that is weird, like, no, you're not my dad, I don't want you to pretend to be my brother. oh, Zach, well, you can pretend to be my brother because there's already that closeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, I mean, there's also a part of it where it's like, I think they hammered a little too hard the idea that Amy isn't super into Rory, partly just because I feel like that it makes the bridge kind of far to gap, you know, when she has to turn around and be interested in him again.
I suppose. I mean, it also doesn't help that in the very first episode that we meet both of them, she can't even admit that she and Rory are dating.
Yeah, there's a part of it where it just feels like Rory's a little too put upon. But where their relationship goes, I do like, and I think you'll like where it goes, too. It's just I feel like early on they sort of beat that horse a little too hard.
Well, just because he's kind of a doof.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a doofy dude, but in a different doofy dude from the way Matt Smith is, where Matt Smith gets to be a doof and is handsome. And well, not to say Arthur Darkville isn't handsome, but they specifically do him up to be a little doofier. Give him like a messy hair and sort of a
like he's not well dressed in the same way that Matt Smith is.
Yeah, he doesn't carry himself with any kind of swagger.
He's not made out of pipe cleaners and bow ties.
Yeah, it's
what is with the doctors being like string beans?
I don't know.
Because even Capaldi's a string bean.
I think it's because they run a lot. And so there's a part of it where you need someone that looks like they run a lot, because Eccleston also kind of is.
Yeah, but not as much.
Tom Baker is a long string bean. You just can't tell because he's put in so many layers.
String bean. Why are all doctors string beans?
There are a couple that aren't. 2, 6, and 7. Really, they're more like short and a little squat.
Okay. So you're either a string bean or a butternut squash.
Yeah, and then or you're in Shudigatwa, who's just caked up for days.
Well, there we go. He broke the cycle.
He did break the cycle.
Well, because even I'm blanking out on her name.
Oh my god, I had Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah, she's not as string beany as the men. She's
slender.
Well, yeah, but she's not like slim.
Yeah, she doesn't have like long limbs or anything. She doesn't like have a lot of like noodly energy.
So I guess she's the one to break the mold first.
In a way, for sure.
In a way, first female doctor. In a way, she breaks the mold first.
In the noodle sense, she breaks it in a way.
In the noodle sense. funny. Can your conscience carry the weight of another dead race?
Oh yeah,
that was the line. So there's also cracks. They ran from the silence and, Signora sacrificing herself into the river, ocean,
into the canal.
Thank you, canal. Saying, can your conscience carry the weight of another dead race? Which just goes back into, just goes to feed the narrative that the doctor leaves quite a bit of destruction in his wake.
Yep, that he does.
Like, in all efforts to preserve the human race and to save the human race, he really does one humdinger of a job. Completely wrecking shit for anything that is not a human.
Yep, you're not wrong. There was, I don't know if you remember this, but there was an episode, a few episodes ago, you had gotten excited about the prospect of the Doctor in Houdini. Dr. Houdini.
Yeah, he brought it back up again.
He did bring up Houdini again.
God damn it!
He also brought up, is it Casanova?
He did say Casanova, because I went... It's me.
He mentioned that he owes Casanova a chicken. So it's one of the another like fun little throwbacks to.
Yeah, but it's not Houdini.
Yeah. We just find out they just another reference to that Houdini is short and not born yet.
It's like, yeah, he was pretty small. That's why he was able to fit into like milk jugs and stuff. But, you know. It's whatever. I want my Doctor Who and Harry Houdini episode. Damn it.
Anything else you wanted to talk about for this episode?
The cracks.
Yeah. At the end of the episode, they talk about how through some of the cracks, they saw silence. And then at the end of the episode, they're getting back in the TARDIS and suddenly everything goes. Because
you hear the noise of the ocean and the chattering of the crowd. And then all at once it goes away.
Yeah, nothing. It's just silence. What could the silence be, Cassie?
I don't know. It bothers me that the doctor doesn't do anything to, like, investigate it further.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that might be the next episode, but
I guess you could also assume that it may just be, like, that's sort of like the doctor is having a crisis. It's not necessarily the truth of what is happening in the moment.
Sure.
We'll find out on the next episode.
Wait, Zach.
What's that?
We're getting very close to who is my doctor.
You're getting close to you think you got a doctor coming up?
I think so.
Well, maybe that means that on the next episode, you'll finally have your Who Is My Doctor. And that will be a fun game to play because on the next episode, we'll have a special guest.
Special guest?
I know. Surprise of all surprises. We will have we will be joined by Jesse McAnally from the Cheese Wheel podcast on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
I think right now Jesse's my doctor.
I guess he is.
Huh. Who is indeed?
Jesse is indeed.
I got to say it this time.
So I was still recovering from that nasty bug I had when we recorded this one. If you couldn't tell by the way my voice sounded like a haunted house. The good news is my voice is back, which means it'll be here to annoy you next week when we watch Amy's Choice. Like we said at the end of the episode, we'll be joined by Jesse McAnally from the Cheese Wheel podcast, so be sure to subscribe to be notified when that episode goes live next week. If you like this episode, be sure to give us a like or 5 stars wherever you're listening right now. And if you want to talk to us directly, you can find us on Blue Sky Threads and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. If you're wondering how this podcast works with a third mind in the mix, be sure to be here next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.